This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen, and today we have a very special guest with us. It is Mark Schofield from all over the place these days now. Mark, I always lose track of where exactly to tag you in there, so you can just fill it in Pat's Pulpit.
I don't even know where it is anymore. Like, I lose track of it too. Touchdown Wire at USA Today, yeah, like you said, Pat's Pulpit. Nice.
Yeah.
Bleeding Green Nation, Big Blue View. I just follow me on Twitter if you feel like it, at Mark Schofield. If you don't, I understand too. Look, I'll try not to drop any Curtis Weaver takes in case anybody gets angry about those on the timeline.
You know, the third round defensive ends is really what gets people going in this draft process. Yeah. So I'm sure our quarterback takes, which is obviously why we have Mark with us here today, is going to be just as fiery. And I'm a bad host. I should have known all of your different website affiliations.
Look, but I don't know it either, so it's no big deal. Don't worry about it.
But today we are going to talk quarterbacks with the quarterback guru himself, and I'm very excited to do that. And we wanted to start, we're going to get right into it because we got a lot to talk about, and we wanted to start with the quarterback at the top of the draft in Tua Tagovailoa, who all of a sudden looks like he might not be at the top of the draft anymore. Mike Lombardi reporting today that there is a couple of teams that have already failed Tua's physical. So Mark, my question is for you, is for this actually, not about his health, but just in terms of Tua as a prospect, is he all the hype that we hear? You know, is he as good as everybody says he is?
I mean, I think if you take the medical stuff and strip it away, whether you have Burrow 1 or Tua 1, like, you can make a case for either one of those guys at the top of the board. I mean, I have Burrow 1, Tua 2. When I watch Tua, I see a quarterback that does some things very well. I see a quarterback that's an ideal scheme fit for a modern West Coast offense, because that's basically what he was running under Steve Sarkisian, you know, with a lot of RPO stuff, but it's stuff you see in the National Football League. I see somebody with a quick release, with good accuracy, short, intermediate, and even down the field. I see somebody with arm talent that's more than enough to thrive in the National Football League. I see somebody that could be schematically diverse, but obviously his best fit in my mind is that West Coast system. I do see some flaws. I mean, I think there are times that, you know, and it's interesting. People have used the fact that he was playing with potentially four first-round wide receivers and a first-round right tackle against him. And I think in a way that did sort of impact him, because there were times on film when you can see him sort of assuming that everything was going to be there for him and not really confirming things post-snap. I do think there are times he relies on his athleticism too much, which obviously led to some of the lower body injuries. But I think, if you strip the medical stuff away, I think he's a clean prospect. The problem becomes the medical stuff. And that's obviously stuff that we can't answer. And I don't know how much we read into the two teams failing him, one team picking the top 10. But if that is true, then he might fall. And I will say that, you know, dating back to the Senior Bowl, I was hearing that teams weren't satisfied with him from a medical perspective. You know, I've heard that teams that might be interested in a quarterback may not be that enticed by what they've seen from him. How much of that, again, we believe, I don't know. I think on the field, between the lines, he's clean, but the medical is a huge part of the picture.
Yeah, I think he's a guy worth taking a chance on. But one of the things I look at, you know, anytime you look at a guy who's got injury history, especially in a position like quarterback, you think, you know, if he's getting hurt in college, then he's definitely going to get hurt in the pros. But still, I think part of it is, you know, he does such a good job creating, you know, extra seconds to look downfield and make plays, big plays off script. But then again, you know, those are also some of the plays where he gets hurt.
Right.
Does he have to tinker what he has, what his sort of DNA when it comes to that? Or do you sort of not mess with that?
I mean, Adam, it's a wonderful question. It's one that I think a lot of quarterbacks have to grapple with. But the problem is sometimes these guys just are who they are, and they're not going to be able to change that. I think a prime example is Carson Wentz. Because if you look back at where Wentz was in college, you know, he was somebody that was willing to extend plays, play late into the play, keep plays alive when probably more reasonable quarterbacks would have just thrown it away or taken a sack and fought for, you know, lived for the next down. And that's part of what has made Wentz great in college, and it was made him great in the NFL. But he's also missed a lot of time, had season-ended injuries. And there are some that speculate, like, for example, Benjamin Solak at the Draft Network, who's an Eagles guy, wrote a piece about sort of the duality of Carson Wentz, which is what makes us love him is what might end his career early. Right. And I think you could make the same case for Tua, which is what makes him great is, like you said, that ability in scrambled drill situations to keep plays alive, to extend plays beyond where other people throw the ball away and just live a third down or punt the ball away. That makes him great, but it leads to mistakes as well as injuries. And in terms of mistakes, you look at he had just the 3 interceptions last year, but one of those against Tennessee was on a first and goal situation where he probably could have just taken the sack. They're good enough to live for second down, for third down, but he extends the play, you know, fights through a potential sack or two, keeps it alive, and then throws an interception, you know. And so it's that, again, like the duality of Wentz, the duality of Tua, what makes him special might sort of be a problem in the long run.
Yeah, I think as a prospect, the one thing that I'm hearing a lot from teams is just like, it's not necessarily about the injuries that have already happened. It's about the injuries that are going to happen. Right. Future, right. And is he quote unquote brittle, you know, is right. Are his bones brittle, and is he just susceptible to every single time he gets into a bad spot he's going to get hurt? So I don't know if it's necessarily the hip or the ankles or whatever the case may be from the past. It's more about looking ahead and saying, if we draft this guy, are we going to get 2 contracts out of him?
Right.
Are we going to get him for the next 5 to 10 years, or are we really looking at a guy that's only going to play 4 or 5 seasons in the NFL? My one question for you, Mark, just from him on the field, is when I watched him, when the pocket is clean or he's able to move around and then reset, he's got plenty of arm. But when he gets crowded in the pocket and he's got people up in his lap and he doesn't have the ability to really step into that throw, I saw a couple of throws just kind of hang a little bit. But maybe I'm just being a little bit, you know, too nitpicky with him.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're being too nitpicky at all. I do think that there are situations when the velocity isn't elite. Like, I wouldn't say that he has the arm talent that, say, an Eason or a Herbert brings to the table. I think it might be on par, perhaps a little bit of an upgrade than Burrow's. I think it's enough for what the Patriots might ask him to do. I think there might be some offenses that are more vertical based, say the Chargers and what we expect them to look like. You know, interestingly enough, the new Tom Brady Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and we expect that offense to look like, you know, that, you know, it might be a little bit of a difficult fit or a tougher fit, but I think you could still do it. But yeah, I don't think you're looking at Tua and saying this is the ideal quarterback from an arm strength perspective. I think he certainly is better off when the pocket is clean, when he can drive into throws, when he can finish them through the front foot. If he has to operate with trash at his feet, like you said, or from collapsing pockets, the arm talent, the velocity will dip as a result.
But the cool thing about it is that he's so good in the pocket, and he's such a pocket right. magician that he just moves around and then resets and he's fine.
So I mean, he's so great at a created space that it doesn't impact him as much as it does other quarterbacks. Like, you know, another guy I'm sure we're going to talk about is Jake Fromm. But Jake Fromm struggles at sort of created space. And then so when you sort of add to that the arm strength issues that he has, it's more of an issue.
The 2 top quarterbacks in this draft, Burrow and Tua, are 2 of the best college prospects I've seen at doing just that, of creating space for themselves in the pocket. Like, that's something that we talk about with Brady a lot, and right. Brady's doing this for 20 years, and these guys are doing it on their college tape. So that's a really awesome part about both of those guys. Is there any love for Love or Justin Herbert or any of those guys in the first round for the Patriots, Mark?
I mean, if it were me and I'm a 23 and both of those guys are on the board, and I think, look, we've got a shot here to take a quarterback that's fallen into our laps. I'm taking Justin Herbert over Jordan Love. And I know that the league is going to, some team is going to talk themselves into Jordan Love in the first round. I would let somebody else make that mistake in my mind. I think there are situations where it could work for Jordan Love. I think if he ends up in Indianapolis, I think that might be an ideal situation for him. Frank Reich has a history of grooming quarterbacks. He helped with Wentz a bit. There's a situation where he wouldn't have to play right away. But I look at the 18 interceptions last year. I look at he could have had 18 interceptions in 2018, the tape that made everybody fall in love with him in the first place. And there are just still too many decision-making problems that leave me questioning the transition for him. With Herbert, look, I know it's a long body of work, and people might wonder, how come he never really became this elite type prospect that these other guys are, like say a Burrow or a Tua? But what sticks out with me is, you know, the more I watch college quarterbacks, the more I watch draft prospects, I used to get hung up on reading defenses and going through progressions and things like that. But I think the skill that translates the best for a quarterback is the ability to just read and throw off of leverage and to sort of make leverage reads in the downfield passing game. And that's something that I think Herbert excels at. You know, there are always throws that stick in my mind for a quarterback as I go through each draft cycle. And one of his from 2018 was a switch verticals concept to the left against California. And they're playing man coverage. They don't switch it. So the slot receiver has to get to the outside to cover the now boundary vertical route. And he sees that and he throws it back shoulder 40 yards downfield, right hash to left sideline on a line. And that's one of those like proverbial put the pen down moments. It's like, look, I've seen enough. Like this kid can make plays in the NFL. And so if I'm given the opportunity to draft one of those two guys, I'm taking Justin Herbert over Jordan Love.
Yeah, I probably agree with you there. The thing that I like about Herbert is he's got those moments in his film. Like you'll watch an entire game and wonder why they're not scoring 55 points and stuff like that. But then another thing, you know, I guess this is a reverse of what you see with Burrow and Tua, but like Herbert's weapons aren't outstanding.
Oh, no, not at all.
You know, they're very average, and he's still, you know, able to fit it in there sometimes. So I guess that's why you don't see that huge production, you know, volcano or anything like that, where he's just, you know, putting up huge numbers. But he does have a couple of like throws every single game you watch where it's like, wow, you know, not many people can make that throw. So, I think he's an interesting
player. And Love has throws like that too. And we know that NFL coaches look at some of the throws that he makes. Like you could even put on like the LSU game where he completes 50% of his throws and throws three picks. He had a post route early in the game in the red zone that he put on the money. If it's caught, it's a walk-in touchdown. And who knows what that game looks like. He had other throws in that game where you're like, man, this guy's legit. But then he'll throw three picks. And you look at the Wake Forest game where that was his season opener and people were excited. He was the darling of the draft summer scouting season. And it was just like, okay, here are some throws here. But it's just still the decision-making wasn't there. Now, look, to his credit, he said all the right things, right? He goes down to Mobile and he talks about the 17 teachable moments. He goes to the combine. He talks about the 17 teachable moments. And it's all the right things. And he's had a decent pre-draft process. And the league is going to look at him and think, big arm, big athlete. He's coming from the Mountain West. We can make this work. He didn't have athletes around him who have better guys to throw to in our system. They look at Josh Allen and they'll talk themselves into doing it. And I know that's going to happen and some team's going to draft him in the top 10. It couldn't be me.
Yeah, I think I fell in love with Jordan Love. I'm not going to lie. I watched the tape and I saw the snappy release and just the arm strength are the two things that I really like a lot. It's mainly just the fact that the throwing motion is so pretty. It's not just that he can throw it on a line, but he can also take a little bit off of it. And I thought he had a little bit more control on his ball than Herbert. Herbert is a guy that I know can rip it up the seam or can rip it outside on a back shoulder 40 yards down the field, like you mentioned. But he's not necessarily going to be the guy that's going to throw the touch ball over the linebacker, you know, down the field. And I think Jordan Love had a little bit more of that on his tape. With that being said, Jordan Love had no idea where underneath defenders were. You know, he was just throwing interceptions to guys that were underneath the defense, you know, zone dropping linebackers, hook curl defenders, that kind of thing, just like it was his job. It seemed like he was almost like didn't even see guys at times in that LSU game that were just clearly underneath the route, and he's just throwing the ball. Herbert, I think the funny thing is that in 2019, like his tape with handling pressure and all this stuff comes out from everybody about how he looks so skittish in the pocket and he can't stand in there. I'm actually not that concerned about that. I'm more concerned about what kind of throws is he going to make every single week consistently for me in an offense like New England's, where it's not just short passing game, vertical passing game, because that's what Oregon is. It's like either a bubble screen or it's a go ball. Those are the three kind of options. So where is he going to fit in? He threw really good, well outside the numbers. PFF's charting had him really good, you know, timing routes, comebacks, hitches, that type of stuff outside the numbers. But I just don't know if he has that consistent intermediate work to be able to succeed in New England.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about. Like that ability to sort of layer throws behind linebackers and in front of safeties. Like that is something that I've seen from him where at times, like, and looking at his interceptions, he had an interception on a seam type route that was a middle of the field open read where the seam was working to the middle of the field against Cal this year where it seemed like he didn't know how to throw it. You know, he didn't know if he should put velocity on it or put more touch on it. And he got kind of caught in between. And it's like, look, man, you've been doing this for a while. You should have this down by now. And part of it was the fact that you look at, like you said, that offense, almost every throw was a hitch, a bubble, or a go, like outside the numbers. And so, you know, there's an incomplete body of work when it comes to doing that. And that's going to be an issue in an offense like New England's. I still trust him more than Love, but it's certainly something to think about.
Well, if they can get somebody that can run the seam like Gronk used to, and you get Herbert to pair that up, you just have him throw the cannon down the seam every single time, and we'll be good. All right, let's talk about the group of quarterbacks now who are more realistic options, I would say, for the Patriots on day two, and then one day three guy that we'll get to. Mark, talk me into Jacob Eason, because all I see from Eason that makes him a viable quarterback prospect is the arm strength. And other than that, I don't see a whole lot.
Yeah, Eason's a tough sell. I think if you're going to make the case for Eason, it goes something like this. There's been a long layoff, and so there's still a lot of development that he can do at the next level. I think if you look at what he did in the Washington offense, you see glimpses of what he'd be asked to do in New England, right?
Yeah.
Some deep drops off of play action, those moments when you've got the back turn to the defense off of play action that sort of collapse the process and window that the quarterback has. You look at some of the reads that he was asked to make between the hash marks that guys like Herbert and others weren't asked to make. And now he's not perfect on those, but at least there's a body of work you can point to and say, we can make this happen for him in the National Football League. And certainly, look, he brings an absolute cannon to the offense, like arm talent that is almost unparalleled in this class. I mean, he has an absolute hose. So, there are some things that could work in New England. The problem is this sort of lack of understanding for escape routes. His plan B always seems to be, I'm going to bail the pocket to the left, which almost seems to be a fundamental breakdown of the thought process because he's a right-handed quarterback. So why is he always sort of rolling out to his left to create time and space? That never seems to make sense to me. There's a situational awareness issues. There are situational awareness issues with him at times, both in terms of reading coverages and reading leverages, and even just knowing the down and distance. Like their game against Cal, they had they were down by two, I think. Late in the game, he scrambles, again, flushes himself to his left, and rather than throwing it away, like he slides down for a loss. It's like you made the field goal like that much tougher for your kicker who managed to get it, but it's like just throw the ball away. Just like it's football 101. And so I think he'd be a tough sell in New England's war room come draft night. Like if he's staring them in the face like at one of their comp picks in the third round, yeah, sure. But for where he's probably going to go in the draft, I think he's a tough sell.
Yeah, I look at him, and I love the arm like everybody does, but then I'll watch it. It seems like he stares down receivers sometimes. Yeah. And, like, it's just you can't get away with that in the NFL. Like, you might be able to get away with that sometimes in college because your arm is so strong, but the coverage is going to be better in the NFL. And I don't see him as sort of like a cerebral quarterback, and I think you need to be, especially if you're playing for New England. So he's not really somebody who I would really celebrate if they took, even if it was later.
Yeah, I mean, it would have to be a situation where, like, okay, we're here at 98 or something, and okay, fine, we'll take a bet, we'll take a flyer on the arm talent, and we'll sit him in place. We won't have to play him right away, so maybe we can mold something, sort of that like Ryan Mallett type pick.
The Ryan Mallett pick is the one I thought of with Eason also.
Oh, it makes so much sense.
Which scares me because I think that they might, fall in love with it all over again. But the sell for me is what you said, Mark, is the reads between the hashes, right? The play action drops, he's got the arm to go on a 5 or 7 step drop and then throw it downfield. I showed one play on Twitter. My very first clip in my thread with Eason was just the play that the Patriots called Charles Barkley, actually, which is the backside guard pull with the over route from the tight end coming coming off of play action. It was right there for you on Washington's tape over and over again. And Eason just, you know, finding that read and throwing the ball on accurately on time, the whole thing. So you can see Patriot-like things in the Washington offense that Eason is doing. But just talking to fans of that Washington team or people that were closer to it than me, everybody comes back to the poise in the pocket and the footwork and how he just kind of breaks down in craters. Yep. A lot like what you hear about people talking about Herbert in the same sense from last year, where when he gets pressured and when he gets, you know, flustered in the pocket, there's no escape route, there's no plan B, and the feet just kind of get all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's exactly right. No, you're right in the sense that, look, you can see Patriots concept, right? That bootleg, that over route to Hunter Bryant, like – you sort of got a bit of a Gronkowski feel to that design in their offense. Sure. But then there's so much else that you know that he'll have to do that's not going to be there. Like the route conversions and all the stuff that's put on the Patriots quarterback's plate from a mental perspective, it's going to be a work in progress. And, yeah, I mean, he does some parts, but not enough to really sort of make me want to go all in on him.
The Ryan Mallett pick is the one that scares me. You see that one? Yeah. And they have had a little bit of a history of just taking guys with great arms, you know, not guys necessarily that polished, but they have a little bit of a history of that, especially in the middle rounds. All right, let's go on the completely opposite side of the spectrum and talk about Jalen Hurts, because this would be all sorts of fun, right? We would all love to see it from a fun perspective and an entertainment perspective, but is it realistic? Because to me, I think that you have to completely reinvent the wheel to bring this guy in and have him be your starter from what they've been doing with the last 20 years with Brady.
Yeah, I mean, I think these two things can be true. Jalen Hurts has an NFL future in front of him, and he can be a starting quarterback in this league. And with the way the game is trending offensively, you can see that path in front of him. But I don't think it's happening in New England. Like, I think Jalen Hurts is a fit in a more vertical-based system more than anything else. But you look at last year, his time in from snap to throw was 3.08 seconds, which would have been dead last in the NFL. I mean, only, you know, Kirk Cousins was close, 3.01. And that's because they do so much stuff off of play action and slower developing plays. But a lot of it with Hurts was taking his time. He's very much a see-it, throw-it passer. Like, there's not a lot of evidence where, oh, he's anticipating this throw or he's anticipating that route. Right. And we know that anticipation is a critical component of what the Patriots do offensively, because it's got some West Coast elements to it where you want to get yardage after the catch. The way to do that is to get the ball out on time and in rhythm. And that's not Hurts' game. Now, we do know that, look, Belichick has been rumored to want an athletic quarterback. You know, he sees what we all see, the way the game is trending, the ability to, you know, minimize deficiencies in protection and, you know, keep defenses honest with the quarterback's legs. He'd love to have that component. But I think you can get that without Jalen Hurts. I do think that, like I said, there's an NFL home for him, but I just don't see it happening here in New England as much as it would be fun to watch. I would love to cover Jalen Hurts up and close.
I really like what Lincoln Riley did with him. It was a real improvement. I mean, than over what they had him do at Alabama. They were like, listen, this guy can run, and we're going to use his legs.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think if you're an NFL team that's committed to, you know, Jalen Hurts as a starter, you got to put those run plays in there, at least some of them, because he's good enough to do that. Like, there's some guys who are good runners in college, but once they get to the NFL, you don't want them running at all. Yeah. But Jalen Hurts is not that. I think Jalen Hurts is good enough to be an effective runner in the NFL. Now, will he be? He won't be a Lamar Jackson or anything.
Right.
Nobody's Lamar Jackson. But I think, you know, but see, and that's just what I don't see the Patriots really doing, is like, as long as you have Stidham on the roster, why are you going to put all these running plays in? So I think he's, you know, he fits in some ways. You know, I think the one thing I don't like too much about Hurts is there are a lot of times in his film where I don't know if it was designed this way, but he would drop back and look, and then before, you know, going to the next read or something, he'd sort of drop his eyes and go. And yeah. I don't know how much of that was which, you know, you don't know.
I think a lot of that was, and it's interesting, Adam, a lot of people give him credit for his ability to keep his eyes downfield in scramble drill situations. And I think he does do that. But I think that's his third step in the process. Yeah. I think for more often than not, his first read, if it's not there, his plan B or his second step is, I'm going to look to create with my legs and potentially run. Yeah. And there are sometimes when he does that, he drops the eyes, and then he sees, oh, wait, I'm not going to be able to run my way out of this. Then he'll bring the eyes back up,
yeah,
look for something downfield, and maybe make something happen in the scramble throw situation. But that gets you to the 3.8 seconds in terms of times, yeah, of snap to throw. And also, you're not going to have that kind of space in the NFL to go through that three-step process. Because once you drop your eyes, they're not coming back up, because you're going to be running for your life because you've got the Von Millers and the Khalil Macks of the world now chasing you down, as opposed to all the space you're playing with the Big 12, where you're playing against three-man tight fronts at times where they're dropping eight on you. You're not going to see that on Sundays.
Yeah, there was one play, I think it was on his Texas Tech game, where he's got a post corner out and the receiver just burns the safety in the middle of the field. And he takes off running because he got pressured in the pocket. And instead of stepping up from the pressure and just resetting and making the throw for a touchdown, he decided to take off. Now, he ends up breaking like four tackles, and it's this highlight reel run, and it's great. But when you watch it from the end zone angle, you can see, okay, that's an open throw that he just passes on. And too often I see that, you know, the Texas Tech game was listed on the Draft Network's page as his best game, right? They have the best game, worst game.
Right.
And that was his best game. And I was really looking forward to watching it because I thought I was going to fall in love with him from it. And what I came away with is, he just misses too many open receivers too often because he doesn't either reload after he moves around in the pocket, or he doesn't see the anticipatory windows going downfield. And the name that I can't get out of my head with him is Tyrod Taylor. Like, I'm just concerned there's too much Tyrod Taylor in him and not enough Lamar Jackson, right? Not enough, like, we're going to take the tight window throws and we're going to make that those plays down the field, where Hurts needs to see the guy open. And luckily for him, he played for Lincoln Riley in a wide open system that had guys schemed open, or you had CeeDee Lamb running down the field by himself, whatever the case may be. And it's all well and good when those are the players that you're working with. But in the NFL, I'm just concerned that the see it, throw it element is going to be a detriment. And we're going to hear a lot in 4 to 5 years about, he's great, but he just doesn't want to pull the trigger on throws that are NFL open. And that's a big thing with Hurts.
And that's Tyrod Taylor to a T. Like, that's exactly who he is as a quarterback. And I think that, you know, in a best case scenario, you know, absolute perfect developmental spot and coaching fit and everything, he could be Dak. But that's an absolute home run. Like, if everything goes well, I think more likely you're getting Tyrod Taylor, which might be that guy that, you know, he can give you a bridge year, or maybe if you're the Chargers this year, you can talk yourself into him. But at the end, you got to be going to the rookie like the Browns did with Baker earlier than you thought. So,
there was another play with him where he had a running back wide open on the wheel route, and the corner on the left side of the boundary, he busts the coverage. He thought it was man, and it was actually zone. So you see the corner streaking across with a drag route, and there's nobody in that zone. I'm like, this is an easy read.
Right.
Like, this is a coverage bust. The guy's wide open, and Hurts just doesn't see it. And he just ends up throwing an incomplete or something like that. And I see too much of that on his tape. And I know I had a lot of Oklahoma fans in my mentions getting on my case about how nobody talks about, you know, other quarterbacks' misses as much as we talk about Hurts' misses. Which maybe might be the case, but these are NFL throws that we have to see, and we have to have him make.
One of my best buddies in this business, Bryce Rossler, works for Sports Info Solutions. He's an Oklahoma homer. He was all in my DMs about Baker like years ago. He was in my DMs last year about Kyler, you know, in the group chat about, oh, Kyler is great, you know, whatever, he's QB1. Not a peep from him about Jalen Hurts being anywhere near the top of the draft board. So I think that tells you more than we need to know, right?
Side note, not to go on a whole rant here, but Dak Prescott is seriously underrated. I'm glad that you brought up Dak as like the ceiling Hurts, because people hear that probably and are like, oh, that's all you're going to get. But Dak is a really good quarterback.
Dak is a very good quarterback. He's a very good NFL quarterback. And to his credit, you know, he was somebody that people looked at and thought, man, I'm not so sure with him, right? You know, for me, I think I had him just above Christian Hackenberg in that draft class. He was like 15 for me that year coming up. And it was all about ball placement, right? Oh, the ball placement isn't there. The accuracy isn't there. The ball placement isn't where it needs to be. He worked at it. Like, you know, our mutual friend Taylor Kyles and I hadn't responded to it yet, but he had a tweet out today about, give me an example of a quarterback whose ball placement was bad, whose accuracy was bad, but it got better in the NFL. Dak's your answer to that. Is it perfect? No. Is it improved over where it was in Mississippi State? Absolutely. I mean, I remember the Thursday at the Senior Bowl, sitting in the stands, watching him throwing, like, they were doing red zone stuff, and he was missing routes. He was missing routes on air, and I'm looking at Charles McDonald and Matt Waldron. I'm just like, no, it's just never going to happen for this kid. And here we are. He's worth the contract he's going to get.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is kind of funny, too, like, how often – like, guys don't change at all from what they were drafted as.
But, That's it, Adam. Like, the more and more I do this, I was saying this, I forget where I was on a show recently, but I was just like, these guys are who they are, right?
Yeah.
Like, Mitchell Trubisky is the same quarterback now that he was at UNC. Jameis Winston is the same quarterback now that he was at Florida State. Like, these guys just are who they are. For some, you can see some development. But those are the rare guys, like the competitively tough guys that aren't going to take like failure as an option. The Tom Brady's and I'd say the Dak Prescott's of the world that are going to will themselves to be better than they were in college. For the vast majority of these guys, they're almost finished products.
Yeah,
I think that's the blinders on for Patriots fans, right? Is that every Patriots fan, it's like, well, he's that in college, but remember Tom Brady? He was a sixth-round pick, and it's like, there's only one Tom Brady, right? That work ethic and stuff, that doesn't come around every
year. There's only one guy that's so driven and fanatical about being pick 199 that he names his film production company 199 Productions. Like, the absolute insanity of Tom Brady is what made him who he is today. Like, I don't think it was the pistachio ice cream or the pliability or anything like that. It was the fact that he's driven to prove it. Like, whether you believe that he's driven to prove those that gave him a shot right, or whether he's really driven to prove those that doubted him wrong, either way, that's what made him who he is. Not everybody's built like that.
Right. I think there's a little bit of both there. And it's interesting because the Jared Stidham conversation is obviously a lengthy one, but Stidham in college was good, then he was bad, then he was good again at last year for the Patriots. So that one is, I mean, like, his accuracy in 2019 was obviously terrible. His poise in the pocket in 2019 was all deplorable for a lot of people. Yeah. But at the same time, in 2018, it was the total opposite. So I think that it's just kind of tough. You mentioned Taylor's tweet, and I think that that's where it came from, was that the accuracy for Stidham in college wasn't great, but the Patriots have really credited him, Stidham, a lot for his accuracy and his downfield ball placement since they drafted him and since they got him in their system.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And, you know, we have to remember that you have to scout the traits, not the scheme, right? Like, that Baylor offense, that Auburn offense, like, those were just not fits for him whatsoever. You know, the Auburn offense is so option-oriented, not in the route conversion sense, but in the you're doing Gus Malzahn, like running the read option and pressing the line of scrimmage and then throw into the bubble at the last second if you can. Like, that's not Jared Stidham. I mean, I remember when I talked to him at the Senior Bowl, it was like he was in Kyle Shanahan's offense that week, and I asked him his favorite route to run, and he just laughed and said, all of them. It's like, yeah, I get it. Because you've been coming from two bad systems, and now you're finally in a pro-style offense. So I think you have to sort of keep that in mind when looking at what he did in college, and that he was miscast in two different offenses that weren't the best fit for him. Why he chose to go to Auburn as a transfer, I don't understand. Maybe he just thought, look, I'm going to get a chance to play in the SEC now and go up against Alabama in the Iron Bowl. Maybe that was it. But those weren't good fits for him. Like, I think this is more a fit for him, and now we'll get to see who he really is as a quarterback.
At the same time, we got Jim Nagy and those guys telling us that he was a first-round talent, I just don't know if he was ever that. But
God bless Jim Nagy, man. I mean, that guy, he goes to bat for those people that go to the Senior Bowl. Like, he's doing it now when he's just basically saying it's not a big four offensive tackle group. It's a big five with Josh Jones. Like, he's doing that. I forget who made him lose his mind. Was it Jordan Love? It was a Jordan Love tweet that came out today, and he's saying that if some scout said that they wouldn't pick Jordan Love, that he'd never use that person as a source or a reference again. Like, now he goes to bat for his Senior Bowl participants, and good for him. I mean, that's how you get guys to buy in and go down to, you know, the Alabama Gulf Coast in January, where everybody wants to be at that time of year, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Let's get back to some of these guys, though. And I think that that's a good segue in terms of they are who they are with Jake Fromm. Is he who he is?
Yeah.
Or is there any improvement there? And, you know, I think that what he is a decent facilitator, I guess we can call him. Just a guy that can get the ball out on time, in rhythm, and make the throws. And if you give him an offense that has great playmakers around him, then he can kind of at least make sure that the thing doesn't sink.
Yeah, I mean, he's a point guard. He's, like you said, on time and rhythm, Evan. Like, there were, like, a handful of offenses where I thought he could walk into that locker room and either not just be a high-end backup, but be a starter in week one. And I would say one of those would have been Chicago before the Nick Foles trade. Like, I look at that Matt Nagy sort of West Coast offense. Fromm's a better quarterback for that offense than Mitchell Trubisky is right now. I think you could look at it, you know, places that don't need a quarterback, but offenses like what Philadelphia is doing or what we expect the Raiders to look like again with another West Coast quarterback. Yeah, Fromm could work there. You could look at Indianapolis. You could look at Tennessee. You could, yes, look at New England and say, for the most part, he could run this offense. Now, the question with him becomes is he's the sort of prototypical high floor, low ceiling prospect. Like, it's going to get him drafted. Teams are going to love him. Risk averse general managers are going to like the fact that he's not going to make you look stupid, but he pretty much is who he is. The one caveat to that, Matt Waldman in his rookie scouting portfolio brought this up. He had had a conversation with JT O'Sullivan about Jake Fromm. And this is something that when Matt told me about it, right when the RSP dropped, I went back and looked at it and checked it out. And there is evidence, if you look at Georgia's offense, there were a lot of three-step drop concepts that they were using five-step drops on for him, which means that it almost made his arm look worse as a result. Because when you're running a three-step drop concept, but you're taking two extra steps, it's that tougher of a throw. Now, I'm not saying that suddenly Jake Fromm has an NFL elite caliber arm. He doesn't. But it's just I think you have to sort of keep that in mind when viewing him. I think that he's your long-term backup, spot starter type who in the right system can be an NFL starting quarterback that's going to be, like you said, a facilitator. He's not going to win games for you, but he's not going to lose games for you either. But he's that guy that can be like the Kirk Cousins type that, you know, you win games with and build an offense around, and he's not going to make anybody look awful unless you give him $60 million guaranteed.
Yeah, Fromm is this year the quarterback that won't go in the first round that I think the Patriots should go after, because I just like how he sort of controls the game.
Yeah.
He's sort of like, and he's been in so many big games at Georgia and played well, you know, against good defenses. You know, I think, like, look, you just, he's not somebody who's got the arm is just going to be like a vertical threat.
Right.
You know, but like, in the Patriots offense, if he's sitting back there with short and intermediate throws, and again, like his favorite throw is the you know, sort of the back shoulder throw to the sideline. He's very good at that. He's very good at that. He throws that better than some NFL quarterbacks right now. And I think he's a good processor. I don't think the game is ever too complex or too big for him. I think, you know, at this now, he's somebody who at this time last year, everybody was talking about as a first round pick. And he didn't have a good, you know, season, right. But I mean, I don't think it was so bad that he'd take a drop this far. And I get that he's not physically what, Jacob Eason is, but he beat Jacob Eason out, when he was at Georgia, he beat out Justin Fields when Justin Fields was at Georgia. I mean, he's got some guys in his wake who are going to be first-round NFL picks.
Yep.
So, I don't know.
I think, like, if you look at, I think it was Daniel Jeremiah who brought out those, like, old Belichick scouting notes.
I was just about
notes.
To bring that up. You read
Yeah, I was actually just looking for the tweet, too. I can't find it. You just go through that checklist of stuff that they value at the quarterback position and tell me that's not Jake Fromm.
I know. Yeah. As soon as I read it, so the three keys to Belichick, of course, this is back in 1991, so who knows how much it really holds. But some of it did hold just based off of, you know, looking through what he's done. decision making, accuracy, and throwing mechanics are the three big check marks. And those are all Fromm check marks. Yeah. And then you also go to the fact that he has three seasons with 46 career starts in the SEC, playing in the college football playoff, playing against Alabama and LSU and all these big schools. And if you look at the Patriots' recent draft history, the two picks from Georgia, you know, the pick, even N'Keal Harry, they claim, you know, the Power Five conference was a big deal in that one as well. They have taken big game players that have played in big spotlights and know how to handle the pressure and are just decision-making accuracy type quarterbacks. And that's exactly what Jake Fromm is. Yeah. So as much as I don't love the arm strength, I don't love some of the things that he does under pressure. Like, he's a guy that he cannot move off his spot. No. And if there's pressure around him, he's going down. You know, there's no off script creation. There's no, you know, kind of playground playing at all. That none of that's going to happen with him. But this, just the resume is a Patriots resume. And you look at that, you can say that you can get him with one of those comp picks maybe at the end of the third round. And again, similarly to Stidham, he had a much better early part of his college career, worse late part of the career. And I think that they kind of looked at that with Stidham and they said, we're going to get the guy from Baylor and from the first year at Auburn, not the guy from last year. And I wouldn't be surprised if they look at Jake Fromm going and bringing Georgia to the national championship game and almost winning the thing against Alabama and say, that's the guy that we're going to get out of him.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. Like, if they pass on Jake Fromm with all of those third round picks, I will be stunned.
Me too.
I will be absolutely. I mean, unless they have already drafted a quarterback, like if somebody falls to them at 23 or whatever. But if they have an addressed quarterback and they just say, nope, no thanks with all those picks in third, I will be floored because he just screams Patriot to me. Like the accuracy, the decision making, like the stuff that they value at the position that we know, like, you know, Belichick, whether it was 91 or 2001 or 2011, I think he still values that stuff. The one thing that might give me some pause is the hand size. And I know that sounds silly, and no, I'm one of the first people to make fun of hand size Twitter, but sub-9-inch hands, it's an issue for December in Foxborough. Like, it just is. Like, and you look at, okay, he's been playing in the SEC, not a ton of weather games, but you throw on that Kentucky game that was in a monsoon, he couldn't throw the ball. Like, so there is one of those instances where, you know, when I talk about hand size, I like to use the example from last year, Brett Rippon and Drew Locke, both of whom had 9-inch hands. Well, you put on their film, and with Locke, he's thrown in weather. There aren't a ton of fumbles in the pocket. You put on Rippon, he can't throw in snow. Fumbles in the pocket, there are times when it matters. And I think that Kentucky game is an example of somebody that with smaller hands, it does factor into the equation. So maybe if they do look at that, that might be the one thing that they might say, yeah, I don't know about that. Otherwise, I think he's a Patriot.
The weird part about it is that Fromm is, in my mind at least, really good at the ball handling thing.
Yeah.
You know, handing the ball off and play action, jet sweeps, all that kind of stuff.
What put Jake Fromm on everybody's radar when he was playing as a freshman? It was that little ball flip in the pocket, right? But he dropped back and he spit at the ball. Everyone's like, oh my God, this is crazy. This is so cool. You don't get to do that if you don't have ball skills. I mean, yeah.
It is interesting that, though, that it's a great point that you brought it up because we don't really account for the weather and for the elements as nearly as much as Bill Belichick does sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
That guy is all over it when it comes to that type of
like
stuff.
I mean, I swear to God, I there are times when I fancy myself a bit of a weather nerd. Like, I'm looking at my bookmarks right now on my Google Chrome, and I've got all the sorts of weather like sites and forums and stuff like that. And I swear I'll go into the New England one before a Patriots game, and there's like accounts where I'm like, that's Belichick, right? Like, he's just a weather nerd. You know he is, because he's always ripping on meteorologists. He knows weather and wind direction and stuff. I'm sure it matters.
There was a game last year, I think it was the Giants Thursday nighter, where the forecast said it was supposed to be like a monsoon. And the first thing that Belichick said in his post-game press conference was like something about the weather people being wrong about the rain, how pissed off he was about it.
Yeah.
Because they're all wearing all sorts of types of cleats and gloves, and they're all prepared. They got the whole equipment staff's got the whole team prepared to play in a monsoon, and then it doesn't rain. And he was scoffy about it. Yeah. He was not happy that the weather people
I mean, the guy that always stresses situational awareness. He knows what the weather is supposed to be, and he gets his team ready for that. So I'm sure the idea of a sub-9-inch quarterback, sub-9-inch hands, is factored into his thinking.
Yeah, at the combine, I talked to Fromm for a little bit, and the one thing that he did say was that he had full control of the offense at the line of scrimmage, you know, setting protections, making checks, that whole thing.
As a freshman.
Yeah, so that all that kind of cerebralness, I think, is going to make him really intriguing. But I do, the hand size is something I didn't think about that we all should. All right, let's get to some of these day three guys before we get out of here. Anthony Gordon from Washington State, somebody that we wanted to talk about. We know Mike Leach will pound the table for him until he's blue in the face. Yeah. But I really liked him, too. And I thought that he was one of the better passers I saw at throwing between the numbers and anticipating windows over the middle of the field.
Yeah, very good at that. I mean, he's somebody that... You know, when I first watched him earlier this year, I was getting ready to do a show like in the next couple of days with Matt Waldman. And I was like, look, I'm going to have a ridiculous comp for him. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but I'm going to do it on air and just get your live reaction. And it was Mahomes. And it's not that he's Patrick Mahomes. It's just you watch him, right? We're getting to that time in our lives where the guys that grew up watching the Montanas – like Brady and stuff, they're all cycling, you know, they're in the back of their career. We've got in the league now the guys that grew up watching Brett Favre, right? Like Mahomes and them. That's who they're watching. But if you're a college kid, who are you watching? You're watching Mahomes. And you see evidence of Anthony Gordon trying to be Patrick Mahomes. Now, the execution isn't there. Let's just say that. I've got a tweet out there where he tries a no-look throw with a wide open receiver on like Y cross in the middle of the field. And there's no reason to no look this, but he does it anyway. And he misses it by like 6 yards. Like it doesn't even come close to being completed, but he's modeling his game after Patrick Mahomes. And so when I brought that up in the air to Waldman, he's like, yeah, I saw the same thing. And what's interesting with him is, you know, the adjustment to arm angles, like the ability to drop the arm slot. And it was Derek Clawson at the combine that asked him about it. And he said, look, I was a baseball player. I was a middle infielder until like I started playing football and, you know, later in junior high and high school. And so I'm used to throwing from any platform, any arm angle, just getting the ball out, turning two. That's something that he can do. I love, like you said, his ability to throw between the numbers, you know, throw between the hash marks, read the middle of the field, attack leverage. He had a throw against, I think, Northern Colorado or something where once he saw the Mike linebacker turn his back, he knew he had the slant route and threw it, you know, led the receiver open for a touchdown. And you talk to him about the offense. It's like you told me at the combine, 4-5 progression reads on every single play. I asked him his favorite play. He talks about Y cross. He's like, look, every snap I'm going go to cross to curl to dig. 4 receivers. Other guys aren't doing that. I'm doing that. I love reading it and throwing it. Like, he can do a lot of the mental stuff. The release, like, Evan, you and I were talking about, the release is perfect. Like, the mechanics and stuff, it's snappy. There's a lot to like about him. I mean, there's him and there's another quarterback on day three. Actually, maybe 2 other quarterbacks. Well, maybe 3 other quarterbacks on day three that I'd love to see New England take a look at. And Gordon's definitely one of them.
I was curious. Now, I like him. I did see a couple interceptions that made me scratch my head. I think, was it against Oregon where it was like there's nobody else around but the defensive back? And I've seen a couple where it looked like he didn't see the defender too well. But, like, I was also wondering, like, how much does Gardner Minshew's success help him? Because, you know, because he's a Leach quarterback, and sometimes they didn't always get the same respect.
Yeah, I think the Gardner thing, you know, if you – like, I spent most of his podium session, like, at his podium at the combine, and the amount of times he was asked questions about Gardner, like, everybody thinks he's Gardner Minshew, and the Gardner Minshew success has enabled people to think, oh, well, maybe guys like him can play in the NFL. They're two completely different quarterbacks. Like, they ran the same offense, but they did it in completely different ways. Like, one of the things I loved about Gardner was, as he's making those 4 and 5 progression reads, his feet are moving in rhythm. Like, he's always ready to throw. Like, the feet are moving fluidly under him. So if he's going to start the read on the left and he comes all the way to the right, he's ready to go. Gordon doesn't move his feet at all. Like, he's an absolute statue. So there are times when he's making these ridiculous off-platform throws, but they don't need to be off-platform. It's just he hasn't moved his feet. They're different quarterbacks, but I do think that the Leach system success for Gardner has opened a door for him, which is why next year, watch KJ Costello, man. Like, he transferred down to Mississippi State to play for Leach. He might play himself into, like, first-round contention at the rate this is going with how people are viewing Gardner and now Anthony Gordon.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty crazy, the standing in the pocket for Gordon and how the whole world just freezes around him. I remember Josh Allen doing that at times at Wyoming. That was something that he struggled with sometimes. But I haven't seen a lot of quarterbacks that literally just stand like a mannequin right in the middle of the pocket and don't move their feet. And all of a sudden you see, he just gets rid of it in a different angle. And you're just like, what are you doing?
When I first turned his film on, it took me the longest time to figure out what was bothering.
There's like one play, like there was the first play of the game or something like that, where he does it in one of the games that I watched, and I was like, "This is the guy that everybody's like hyping up." Like, what are we talking about here?
So weird, but it weirdly works, and it's one of those things. Like, I know he's working with Sage Rosenfels to like get the footwork better. You see, like maybe there's developmental growth potential here, but yeah, it's odd. It's very odd.
But then again, there was another sequence of plays, the same drive where it's, you know, darts to the middle of the field and then an anticipatory deep ball for a touchdown, you know. Yeah. And that those are the types of kind of sequences that you do see from him. I love the release, too. And that release allows him to make throws on the move and make throws off platform. And he just snaps it right out.
And look, the other thing with him is, he's just got 1 year as a starter, but he's got a hell of a lot of game reps. I mean, throwing it like 70 times a game.
Right.
A lot of practice there.
He's got a lot of things that the Patriots might look for. I don't know how much of like the air raid adjustment and all that kind of stuff would factor into their evaluation. I don't think a lot, because they drafted Stidham in a broken system. So it really doesn't make that much of a difference, I don't think. But the release point, the quick release, keeping the offense on time, throwing between the numbers, there's a lot to like there from a Patriots standpoint. And I think that the only kind of knock that I would have on him is that he just does some weird stuff. He just does some head-scratching things, and sometimes the mistakes do kind of snowball on him a little bit, where he throws one early interception or he misses one early throw, and then all of a sudden he's making more mistakes as the game kind of rolls on. So maybe that bounce back, you know, kind of thing with him is a little bit of a question mark. All right, that's 52 minutes and counting of great quarterback talk there. There's one quarterback that I just wanted to quickly throw at you, which is James Morgan.
Yeah.
From Florida International. The Patriots have shown a ton of interest in him for whatever reason. Skype calls. I think they met with him at one of the, you know, Senior Bowl Shrine Games, something Shrine like game, that.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've shown a ton of interest in the kid.
Yeah. And I can see why. Like, it's a situation where if you don't like Jordan Love enough to draft him in the first round, even if he's there at 23, but you like some of what he showed on film, you'll like James Morgan in the sixth round. Like, he's got the big arm. He's got the athleticism. Got some head-scratching decisions. And you look at last year, like a 58% completion percentage. Not the completion percentage is the be-all and the end-all, but it's not great. Some of the ball placement wasn't what you'd like to see. But there are still some moments where you're like, this can work in the NFL. Like, there are some moments when he'll go through a read or two and get to the third read and throw an absolute rope, and you're just like, I get it. There are other moments where you're like, I don't understand if he's ever played the game or not. And so it's an up and down thing. But if your thought process as New England is as follows, we're going to go all in on Stidham this year and see what we have. And if it's bad, maybe we'll be at the top of the draft board next year to get a guy. So we don't need to go early, but we might want to get somebody in to at least take a look at and evaluate throughout camp and into the preseason. Then you're looking at a guy like James Morgan, and he has a lot of the things that they like. He has the big arm, that, like you said, the Ryan Mallett type draft pick. Well, this is it, just in the sixth round.
Right. Yeah. That's a great comparison.
Yeah. And the only thing I don't like about him really is he uses that fastball for everything.
I mean, you know, look,
you could be 5 feet away from
loading
him.
It up, man.
I can't use the Nuke Lelouch comparison again so quickly after using it for Josh Allen. But yeah, I mean, everything's, you know, everything requires the fastball to him. Every problem is a nail, and he's got the big old hammer.
It's great.
It's wild, because I never thought the Patriots would consider a quarterback like that, where everything is just a dart, and there's no touch, and there's no kind of anything. But at the same time, if you're going to pick a quarterback in the sixth round, then at least let him have the arm talent to make an NFL team.
Right. I mean, like a lot of people have thought, like maybe like a Nate Stanley or somebody like a Jake Luton from Oregon State. Yeah. Those guys are nice. This guy has the big old arm. Like, if you're going to bet on a trait working at the NFL, like, you're going to bet on an elite-type trait. And arm strength is a pretty good one to place a bet on.
Yeah, and I know PFF likes James Morgan a little bit for those big-time throws. You know, a guy that just drops some dimes out there. And he had a lot of drops by his receivers also. A couple of games that I watched of his receivers are dropping passes left and right. So that's a big part of it. Any love for Cole McDonald or
Taylor Huntley? I like Tyler Huntley. I did my top 11 quarterbacks just in a vacuum, and Tyler Huntley was quarterback 11 for me, and Cole McDonald was just a couple of notches above him. I adore Cole McDonald. I compared him to Maverick from Top Gun. That was my comp for him. Because look, he's gonna do it his own way, and sometimes he's gonna fly a plane into a mountain, like you're throwing four picks and getting benched against Arizona. My favorite combine story of all, guys. I was there for his entire podium session at Indy. And I wanted to ask him, I asked him a ton of questions, but his bowl game against BYU, he leads a comeback drive in the closing minutes to win the game. And he has a 3rd and 1 with like 50 seconds left. And he's got a crossing route just past the first down marker that is wide open. It is uncovered. And I'm thinking, look, you take that, stop the clock after the first down, regroup, huddle up, move the chains, whatever. And he throws a whole shot vertical route along the left sideline in between the corner and the safety against the cover two look. And he drills it in there for a huge play and gets him down into the red zone. And I'm like, okay, this is incredible, but I have to ask him why he did this. So I asked him about it. And he's like, look, man, we're a counter-based offense. Okay, if you're giving me that whole shot, I don't care if it's 3rd and 1, 4th and long, early in the game, 4th quarter, closing seconds, I'm throwing it. I'm going to throw. And I'm just like, man, that's just fantastic. I'm so glad I got that on tape. He was fantastic to talk to. He even answered the question about the dreads because he had the huge dreads coming out. Trevor Sikkema from the Draft Network asked him about it. I tweeted this out as well, the entire answer. But the long story short, he's like, look, I didn't want NFL teams thinking the wrong thing about me. The way I view it, hair grows back, opportunity doesn't. That's a tremendous answer. Like, just draft this kid because he'll be fun to cover. I love McDonald.
We could use a good quote in the Patriots locker room. You know, just a guy that just drops some hilarious quotes. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, and then look, let's not forget that he played with what can only be described as a lower body injury. And I tweeted this out last summer. He had like a torn muscle in the groin area. So the blood swelled into one of his testicles, swelled up to the size of a grapefruit. As we learned from Tom Brady this week, there's some similarities there, kids. So, come on. Give it a shot. Cole McDonald in the 6th round.
That is exactly why we had Mark Schofield on the podcast today, was to talk about Tom Brady's nuts. It took us an hour in, but we finally got there.
Yep.
Mark, this is always so much fun. We could probably talk about this quarterback class for another hour, but I don't want to keep you too long. We really appreciate you coming on, though. Is there anything that you want to tease or, you know, tell people where they can follow you? Because obviously they're going to want more knowledge after this.
Right. Yeah, if you want more knowledge on Tom Brady's nuts, I guess you could follow me on Twitter at Mark Schofield. Look, over at Touchdown Wire, I'm dropping the top interior offensive linemen this weekend, defensive linemen. They've got me watching guys in the trenches.
I mean,
come on. What else would you want, right? No, but
I love it.
Follow along for the hijinks on Twitter. I'm Mark Schofield. Lots of Toto gifts and Peaky Blinders gifts and all sorts of good stuff.
Jonah Jackson, by the way. That's the interior guy you got to watch from Ohio.
Cesar Ruiz, number one. Jonah Jackson, number two. Those are my top guys.
I like Damian Lewis from LSU a lot, too.
Yep, he's up there, too. Who else was good? I liked Nick Harris, the Washington center.
He was fun. He's a center-only guy, though, right?
Yeah, he's a center-only guy. Logan
the center only guys like for the Patriots, they like that flexibility. You know, they like the Ted Karras type that can play 3 different spots. And, you know, unless you're going to be a star for them and they, you know, at the position.
I'm trying to think of who else I like. Oh, I erased it. Who else did I like? Cushenberry, the LSU kid, because he's played a little bit of both. I also like that Robert Hunt guy, but he was more a tack guard guy. But I graded him as a guard. I think he's good. Plays with a bit of a mean streak. And there was somebody else that I loved. Oh, it was Muti, the Fresno State kid. I liked him too. But yeah, there's some good interior guys this year.
There's a good interior class. It really is. And the Patriots don't have an immediate need there because they have returning three starters on the interior. But with David Andrews' blood clots thing and Joe Tooney on the franchise tag, you know, there's future need there potentially. So it's a good interior O-line class. Adam, anything going on? I know we're both just kind of in holding patterns right now.
Yeah, kind of in holding patterns. Just draft this, draft that, you know, a little bit of everything, every position you can think of. So we'll be on that more.
I love it. And on clnsmedia.com, make sure to go check out all my position previews that are up now. I did linebackers today. Got a lot of shit for not putting Zach Bond as a linebacker, even though he's an edge defender. Getting shit for Curtis Weaver on Twitter. But go ahead and check out the previews. I got safeties. I think I got 9 or 10 safety previews. You know, guys previewed in that one tomorrow because that's a meaty one for the Patriots and a lot of good day two safety options, I would say. Maybe not a stud, you know, Jamal Adams type in this class, but a really good depth to this class. And then Adam and I will be back next week. We got another big hitter coming on with us. It's Brad Kelly. He's going to come on and break down wide receivers with us, which is obviously we saved the two best positions for last, quarterback and wide receiver. So we'll be on the podcast with that next week. But until then, signing off for Adam Kirchen, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks again to our guest, Mark Schofield, for coming on. And thanks to you for listening.